Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the New Adjuster Podcast, Season 3, Episode 7. This is one of my most favorite words in the English dictionary, the penultimate episode. So the episode before the season finale. Again, super thankful and happy that you are joining us today. If you've missed any of our previous episodes and or seasons, go back, give them a watch or a listen. Wherever you get your podcasts, a bunch of different platforms there. Before we get started, I'll introduce myself again. My name is Murphy. I'm in the property training department here at CNC. Kelsey is out today, so it's a solo pod. But again, very thankful that you're joining us today. Please go ahead and subscribe to our YouTube channel, CNC Catastrophe and National Claims. Like this video, leave a comment. Maybe you get featured in our season finale. We're actually looking forward to maybe doing that. But we will go ahead and get started today as we've got another fantastic guest. All right, everyone, without further ado, we'll go ahead and jump into today's episode. It is titled, Why Most New Adjusters Fail and the Training That You Actually Need. If you watched last season, this guest is not going to be a new face to you, but I'll let him go ahead and introduce himself now.
Murphy, thanks for having me again on another great episode here, but I will want to make a comment. I thought this was the final episode that we were doing.
It is not.
I thought I was the finale guest. I mean, like the ones that tie this whole season up.
That's how we sold it.
And brings it all. Exactly. So I'm very kind of disappointed in that. So, no, as you know me, I'm Craig Fowler. Yep. I am the Executive Vice President of Training and Flood Technical here at CNC. Been doing this for almost or really over 35 years. Been involved in claims handling from adjusting to management, to supervision, to claims director, because I think last time when I was on, I was claims director at the time.
Chief claims officer.
Chief claims officer at the time, so kind of running the claims department. So I guess the benefit is I've seen everything from top to bottom, everything in between, which has grown into helping and create better training because we see every side of what takes place out in the field. Yep. Behind the desk, what the clients are looking for. So we get to get all this feedback basically from this just years and years and years of being involved in just different parts of the claims process and evolve that and compress that down into training to give back to adjusters.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a great benefit having all that knowledge, and there's no sense in us keeping all the knowledge here. Let's give it back. Let's help others who are new and want to be a part of a claims department as a desk adjuster or in the field as a field adjuster to give them the tools they need to be better at their job.
Agreed.
So
because you've been in so many different areas of CNC, and you don't have to be partial to one or the other, but would you say training is where your passion is? Is that what you feel like you're called to do?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
At first it was kind of like, yeah, okay, you're going to be involved in training. This is great. But then when you see you're helping other people that want to be helped, that really reach out and say, give me some advice, give me some direction. I like doing that. I like putting the material out there. I like looking at a process going, okay, if I was in their shoes, what do I need to get to this point? Or what I need to help make this claim get settled? Or what do I need here and that? So I look at it from that perspective to bring all that information in to create that. So, yeah, I really gotten the point of enjoying training and developing, creating stuff a lot more than other parts that I've been involved in.
Well, and like I said, I was in claims, too, obviously, before moving over to training with you. It's, to me, the basis of everything is the training department. And that's not a slight to any other department.
No.
To RDL with getting the right people. But then you got to train the right people. Sure, you got to have people to work claims, but they got to be trained to work those claims. It's kind of the end all be all. If you don't have the training, you're all in the bad foot.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not starting in the best way.
It is.
Possible.
I mean, it is 100% the foundation of a successful claims operation.
Agreed.
And if it's not there, and if there's cracks in it, there's flaws, if there's things are missing, it doesn't help an adjuster at all.
Yeah. Or even if it's out of date.
Yeah.
The training can be out of date, and then you.
Yeah.
You know,
and at the same time, it can't be overwhelming.
Yep.
And that's one thing I've noticed. You know, we do a lot of stuff. A lot of the clients we work with, they have their training and their stuff like that they go through, and they have these webinars they just throw out there all the time.
Yep.
And they just dump stuff on you.
They
and then you look at it and go, well, what are we supposed to do with this? And there's no rhyme or reason to what they're doing. And it just seems to be so just unstructured.
Sure.
That then you get overwhelmed with, and you're like, okay, what do I do? And I could see it from a new adjuster's point of view.
they would just go, okay,
yep,
I'm going back somewhere else.
What did Kramer say? I'm out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like, I'm done. So yeah,
exactly. And like I said, for new adjusters that are obviously listening and, you know, staying along with this podcast, as a new person, if something is overwhelming, you're immediately going to unplug and you're going to be like, maybe this isn't for me.
Correct.
But you can speak to this too, and our claims department folks that have been on the podcast say this also. When they look at a policy, a 75, 80-page policy, how do I condense that down to something I can understand and digest quickly? Training is the same way.
Yeah.
You know, you get 10 hours worth of training from a carrier or some type of entity. Well, when you got people coming in fast, and you don't have 10 hours to get everybody up to speed. You got to really compress that down, like you said earlier.
And the other thing is that 10 hours everything?
Right.
Because there's, if you look at just like an estimating program for Cotality or Xactimate, one of those, and you're just like, okay, I'm brand new. I need to write an estimate.
Yeah.
That's easy to say versus actually logging in first.
Yeah.
Make sure you have your credentials second. Yeah. Make sure you have your parameters set third. And people don't think about every single one of those little steps that go into it. But if it's a new adjustment, you miss one of those steps, you hit that barrier. You hit that block wall and you go, okay, what do I do now?
Right.
Oh, I can't figure this out. Let me just go do. Let me go back to McDonald's and then flip burgers. Let me go back to cutting grass or do whatever I want to do.
Yeah, and I think that's important about training too. You can't just come in and skip the initial steps and be like, all right, how do I sketch a roof?
No,
you got to be able to set that file up. You got to be, if you're a desk adjuster, you got to know what to look for before you ever call the policyholder and start asking questions. Sure, if you know how to write a letter, it's great, but you got to get there first.
Yeah.
You know, same thing with the field. What equipment do I need? How do I speak to them?
And for someone brand new to adjusting that they're coming in, you know, training sets the tone for everything you're going to do. Mm-hmm. The policy knowledge, the estimate writing, even customer service. Customer service is a key part of training too that people don't think about.
Yep.
And it all factors in together. The ultimate goal is to get a claim settled successfully and accurately.
Right.
And if you're missing any of those little steps in between, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. And to your point, too, about the customer service, if you get off on the wrong foot and you're not providing a good experience to that policyholder or whoever you're dealing with, it's only going to make it harder, the actual claims process, because now they're a little agitated.
Oh, yeah.
You're flustered, you know, and now your head's basically and spinning like a top now.
It's just a snowball effect.
It is.
It's just going to roll downhill
and
take out that little town at the bottom of the hill. It's just going to grow. And that little town at the bottom of the hill is the claims department, and everybody's just going, what did you do? Oops.
Yeah, because you didn't take the time to go through like we had the customer experience journey training that we're all really proud of.
Yeah.
Going through that might seem like, well, yeah, that's telling me how I need to speak to them. That goes a long way, though. That's not just some innate ability that people have. You kind of got to learn how to do that.
Yes.
You know, how to deal with, I mean, these are catastrophic sometimes situations. Whole house is gone. Roof is caved in. You can't just treat that as the same as a fence blew over.
Yeah.
You got to know how to approach that policyholder, even if it's a PA, whoever.
But at the same time, we'll say you almost need to treat it as the same as a fence blew over in the terms of severity.
Correct.
Because in that policyholder's eyes, that fence blown over is just as bad as the other policyholder's house being blown over.
That's the biggest thing.
They're just like, exactly.
Yeah.
And then guess what? You show up, you're the first person they see, and they go, help me.
Yeah.
And you go, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know policy. I didn't learn how to interpret the policy.
Right.
I didn't know how to identify perils. I didn't know how to do this. I didn't know this. And they immediately go, what the hell do you know?
Right. And then they go calling and there's a complaint and they want somebody new.
Find somebody else.
You know, and then that timeline starts to stretch out. That claim takes longer because you didn't take the initial first steps.
Yep.
Yeah, I think all that's good for a new adjuster. Now, you have trained, I am very comfortable in saying thousands of adjusters at this point. Hundreds would just not do it justice. Thousands of adjusters is probably more likely.
Yeah, directly and indirectly, several,
whether it be through webinar, in-person, conferences.
You mentioned that, probably.
Think about it.
No, probably tens of thousands.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it.
Yeah.
Just at conferences alone in the last 5 years, you could probably say, well, that was probably 1,000 people.
Yeah.
I mean,
a conference not too long ago that I was at doing a presentation with somebody else, it was about 500 people in the room.
Yeah.
So,
think about how many people attended our conference. What was it, 2 years ago?
Now, 499 were asleep, but, I mean...
See, and that's the part about being the trainer, too, is the engagement part. You can sit up there and be – and we've all sat through those training classes where they're monotone and
They're not super enthusiastic. Those are tough.
Those are very tough. Are you know, it's tough. Funny that you mentioned that. And you, we were talking about earlier on is getting, you know, my kind of my passion has become training. Mm-hmm. Well, back in college, when I was trying to figure out what I was going to do in life, you know, it was like, okay, you know, I'm thinking I'm going to be in marketing and, be an astronaut, be the first person on Mars, being involved in marketing and advertising and all that stuff. And I kind of got into that because, to be honest, it was the easiest path to take at the time. Yeah. But I took a, we were required to take speech classes.
Yep.
And I was like, just nervous as heck. Yep. And I remember the, my professor, probably the only professor I remember, Miss Betty. And she was just, she was, I mean, she was just polite, kind, didn't criticize, just helped you through that process. Mm-hmm. She was a great professor. She was a teacher.
Yeah.
But I took a class that I thought I would never, ever, ever use. And now, how old am I? Pretty old. Now I think about it. trying to figure out how old I am. Well, I'm trying to figure out the math between when I graduated and now when I really started using it. And okay, and this kind of goes into the whole training piece. I was taking a class that I never thought I'd use, or I was like, what the heck am I taking that for? And now it actually, I use it.
Yep.
I use the form to engage, to keep people active, to keep people awake.
Yeah.
I mean, because you're right. Yeah, you get some of those classes and I think there's this not a saying, but a I can't even think of what it's called. But there's a 25% rule, I think it is, where you're going to lose your audience within like 10 minutes of your presentation, and it's just like you lose them, and the only way to keep them is engaged, auditory, visually. Just going through those three steps of learning to keep them engaged in the whole process. Yeah. So
it's funny you say that too about, you know, you're going to lose the audience in the first 10 minutes. We're both Catholic, go to the same church, basically. Father John, he starts off every homily with a joke.
Yeah.
And I remember my dad asking him years ago, why do you do that? And he said, if you tell a joke and you get people laugh, they'll be more engaged.
Yep.
You know,
training
classes seem to be the same way. You don't necessarily have to be funny, but you got to do something that catches them.
You got to do something to catch them.
Because for these new adjusters, they're getting so much information all at once, they can tune out really quick.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't blame them. You don't blame them if it's so much information and it's boring and monotone and, you know, overwhelming.
And it can be overwhelming.
Yeah.
And it can be overwhelming. That's where you have to, when you look at training, you can't just take the whole policy and go, here, learn it. You got to dissect it.
You do.
And we've taken a lot of training within house and taken it and looked at it and go, okay, how can we separate these sections out? Just like a standard flood insurance policy, for example, because you know, kind of flood technical is kind of the side, but taking the standard flood insurance policy, like the dwelling form, and looking at that as a whole, and then going, okay, which sections can we pull out of here? And then pulling those sections out, then going, okay, not just what's on paper, what's black and white we're going to train on, but why. Yeah. Does that matter?
Right.
And I think that's also a huge piece of it is the importance of why does this matter?
Yep.
Not, okay, you have coverage for here and here and here. Great. We understand. We interpret coverage now. We can look at the policy and go, okay, with that. But why does that really matter?
Yep.
And I think that's also a key to
Nick Saban said that too.
Did he?
Now with athletes, they don't care how you have to do something. They want to know why it's important that I have to do it that way. To your point. That's another piece of it.
I knew Nick Saban and I were very similar.
There you go. There you go. You know, and we talked about the responsibility of us as trainers to be engaging, to, you know, catch people's attention, to break it down, make it easier to digest. But there's another side of that coin, too. The adjuster, the new adjuster, the trainee, has to also take it seriously.
Yeah.
Talk to us about how important that is, about coming in with the right mindset, ready to learn. Like you said, willing to learn.
It's extremely important to be taken seriously. And, you know, one of the things we look at for new adjusters, and I think this is kind of where their mindset is why should I take this seriously when maybe I don't have that opportunity yet to work a claim, to get a deployment, to be over here? And a lot of people think that way, like, I'm not going
to
put the time in until
learn it
until somebody gets
it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that is a serious no-no in this industry. Yeah. As a new adjuster, you do not do that. If you do something like that, you're guaranteed to fail. Yeah. You're going to crash and burn because, like we talked about earlier, you're going to get out there and some of those cracks in that process that you are not trained on, that you may think you know it all because one of your buddies told you, hey, this is how you kind of do this, but you don't know how the client that you're working for wants that specifically done, you're done.
Yeah.
You're going to be done as an adjuster, and you're going to be immediately out of the system. And a lot of adjusters, new adjusters, think in that terms.
Right.
I'm not going to do something until somebody gives me something in return.
Right, yeah.
And you got to wipe that attitude, wipe that mindset out. Yeah. You got to think of, how can I make somebody see me in terms of my quality before I ever get an opportunity? Right. In terms of my accuracy before I get an opportunity, in terms of my commitment before I get an opportunity. And that's really spending the time to take as much training as possible.
Right.
And why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And this also, I see this a lot. I see this with older adjusters too.
Okay.
Like, I know it all.
Right.
Why would I do that?
I've been doing this 25, 30 years. Yeah.
And I'm sorry, if you think you know it all, you're done. You're a dinosaur now.
Yeah.
Get out of the industry.
Right.
Go somewhere else, because we're always evolving.
Yeah.
There's always a new client interpretation of something. There's always a change in something. Mm-hmm. There's always a process that changed. It's just a matter of evolving with what's happening. And you, as a new adjuster, you have to see that as well. You have to spend the time. You have to make the commitment. And you may be coming in this and you already have another job.
Right.
And you're trying to say, okay, I'm going to try to establish myself. Make the time to commit to it. Don't just put it off. Don't wait for a storm to happen. Get out there. Get into these systems. Like, for example, our claims management or learning management system, CNC Pro.
Yeah.
You know, when you go in and you take courses, we're grading you.
Yeah, and you're tracking
Tracking you.
Yeah.
That stuff is going back into our system to see, okay, how much is Murphy? What did he learn today?
Right.
What did he learn this month?
Right.
Where was his scores?
Right.
What was his quality? And you may never have a claim, but then it gets graded.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we look at Murphy and he has a 90 for everything he's already done. And he's done 15 courses. And then we have a Jeremiah who has done 2 courses and failed both of them. And then who is going to get that opportunity?
Right.
Murphy is,
not
a Jeremiah, because we have more confidence in where Murphy is with his training and what he's learned versus Jeremiah, who's just like, okay, he's obviously not committed.
Right.
And if he's not committed here, when we give him a claim, are we going to have that same decommittal back here? If that's even a word?
Yeah. I mean, Well, and you know, the thing about it too is with those training classes, whether it's from us or anybody, a lot of it is prerequisite stuff. If you don't take the class, you don't even get the opportunity.
Yeah.
So many of these carriers now, and it's smart on their part to say, hey, we want adjusters to have gone through A, B, C, D, E, F, G before they ever get a claim. Well, if you hadn't done it, you don't get the opportunity.
You've got to have the qualifiers.
Right? So you got to do it.
You got to do it.
That's another, like, somebody's got their hand on their back and pushing you, like, hey, you got to do this. If you want to work, you got to do it.
And you know, one of the mottos we have around here, or one of the sayings we've had around here for a while, dominate the offseason.
Yeah.
You got to take the opportunity in that offseason to get better for when you get that opportunity. It's easy.
Yep.
It's you've grown into a habit of doing things, and you're understanding the policy interpret. You're understanding why it's this way. You're understanding the coverages. You're understanding how to scope. You're understanding all these things that you've actually trained on or worked on to be improved, so that when you actually use them in a live environment, you're not struggling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and think about, you played baseball, right?
Yep.
Okay. Baseball players, I mean, they get paid way too much money. I'm going to say that out loud.
No salary cap either.
Yeah, they just get paid way too much money. But you think about a baseball player who's, what's the highest baseball player right now that's getting paid?
Probably Shohei.
How much are you getting paid a year? Like,
what's Shohei's number, Jeremiah? You know. Yeah.
How much?
It's a lot. I mean, it's close to a billion.
Okay, a billion.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's getting paid a billion
for
what?
It's over a bunch
of
years.
What, like 2 years or something?
No. It's like a 10-year,
But do you think he's getting his billions that he knows everything and he's just going to go?
No.
He's just going to go when it's time to go walk up to bat at a game, he's just going to go walk with I don't know what he does.
Yeah,
he might be a pitcher.
He's both.
He's both.
Yeah.
You think he's just going to walk up there and go, okay, I can hit this ball of the fence every time because I'm getting paid this much money and I know it all. No, I mean, think about it. From the very beginning, training day, they go out there and they do the fundamentals over and over and over again. And I heard a story about some of these guys who are getting paid these millions. They don't start out hitting a ball when they go back to training. They start out swinging a bat at a tee ball.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just
hitting
like
off a tee. Yeah, soft toss.
But they did that like 25 years ago, and they're not that old. Well, no, they did that 10 years ago.
They did it in Little League. Yeah,
in Little League.
Right.
But they're going back to the basics.
Yeah.
And I think that's where new adjusters and even seasoned adjusters have to think about is when you get training opportunities, start with the basics, work from there. And when you've gotten to the point where you think you know enough, go back to the basics and look at them again and go to these training classes and go to these training opportunities and look at this and see how it's evolved and say, what has changed? And it might be a small percentage of what you learned from the beginning, but it's something.
But it is different.
Yeah. It's different.
Calling back to your last episode, the mastering file reviews and audits and things like that. One little thing can screw up a whole file review.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's about getting it right.
And you know, why do adjusters get in this business to begin with? Money.
Yeah.
And money is time. And if you don't have the training to control and manage your time, instead of just, for example, equivalent this to making $100 an hour, you're making $10 an hour because your claim just took 10 times longer.
Exactly. That's a really good point.
And it's like, okay,
that's a good way to think about it.
How do I be the most efficient I can be?
Yeah.
And the way you get more efficient is you got to be involved in training during the off season.
Yeah.
Every opportunity that you get, every opportunity says, we have this new training class we just put out. It is basic 101. Well, I've been in this business for a long time. I don't need but yes, you do.
Yeah, you do.
Go back to it.
Yeah, you do.
Learn, listen.
Yeah. A lot of our training classes are extremely inexpensive, too. I mean, we're not charging hundreds of dollars for training classes.
No.
Sometimes it's just an admin fee, just to show up, sign up. You get the handouts that we produce type of fee, $25. Yeah. Why not?
And the admin fee is there because of our cost that we associate with it. Yeah.
Exactly.
And we're
what
getting
it costs for IT to set it up and the production that, like, Jeremiah does when he records it.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not making money off of it. If anything, we're making you money off of it. We're trying to get you better.
Get you better.
And the best part about it is, I've said this probably 8 times this season, which is 7 episodes. Maybe I didn't say it 8 times. But the more good adjusters we have, the more claims CNC gets. If CNC only has 1 or 2 good adjusters, we're not getting claims.
Yeah.
Everybody's got to be good.
Yep.
It's a collective group. Yep. Everybody does good. Everybody gets good training. They put out good work. We get more opportunities, and it filters down.
Yep.
It's just the way it goes. So, all right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll jump into part 2 of our interview today. Fantastic first segment with our guest today, Craig Fowler. Before we jump into part 2, we want to give you our sponsor of the day, Blue Leopard Agency. Marketing shouldn't feel like a guessing game. If you're overwhelmed and looking for a way out of the chaos, Blue Leopard Agency has your back. Escape the marketing jungle, reach your ideal customers, and fuel your business growth with a custom strategy. Get started today at blueleopardagency.com. Okay, back again. Let's jump right back into it. How have you noticed over the years, you said you've been doing this right at 35, maybe even a little over 35 years, how have you noticed that the role of training has really evolved over the decades? You know, how has it changed from way back when you started to like now when we bring in new folks?
How has it changed? It's probably just a simple answer, tremendously.
Yeah.
I mean, it has just, I mean, the way training has originated, because, you know, a while back, training really wasn't out there. Mm-hmm. It was you really took it on your own to learn something. I mean, there was some other there was some companies out there and there was some stuff out there. You know, a lot of people go out and they'll get their state license. Mm-hmm. You know, the state license has their courses and everything. Right. And you know, as a new, something I'll point out as well, as a new adjuster, somebody might come up and ask you one day, well, what's the difference between getting a state license and going through all that and actually getting additional training?
Right.
And to that point, there is a big difference
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's great to have a state license.
Yeah.
But what does that get you in terms of actually understanding details of a client's or an insurance company's
policy?
Because
it's just hitting the broader high points when you take the state license test.
And they're estimating standards and the way they interpret something or the way they want something done. Mm-hmm. And so it's critical because I've seen that a lot of go, well, I have 25 state license.
Right.
It's good.
Yeah.
But
do you know how to work this carrier's estimating program?
Yeah. Do you have the knowledge and the standards and the estimating skills and the customer service and all these other pieces that go into that whole process of making sure a claim successfully handled?
Right. So would you say, like, when you first started, was the, I guess, training or knowledge base, was it just more standardized? Everybody just kind of did the same thing, and now it's really gotten more specialized per carrier?
It definitely has. I think carriers have started to evolve more. And, you know, when the process has changed tremendously, because, you know, before, think about it, we had instructor-led classes.
Yeah.
That's what we, you know, down here, that's what we did.
Yeah.
People came in, if you were out of town, oh, well,
sorry,
you would have to come in for an instructor-led class. And there were a few and far between. We'd have instructor-led classes. But there were larger topics. There were more generalized topics. Yeah. There weren't really specifics. And it's like, okay, for example, like flood, when you have a whole class on flood.
Right.
Okay, and then not start taking out bits and pieces of issues or trends or things that you see in order to say, okay, now we have to have a class on there.
Right.
Because we couldn't get the whole message out to everybody.
Yeah.
Because the amount of time you had.
Exactly, yeah.
And so you're dealing with these, you know, instructor-led classes, and then you started webinars started coming out. Mm-hmm. People started doing webinars, and I just make a point of webinars. Back in the day, a couple of years ago.
Right, yeah.
10 years ago, probably. Now that I think about it, it's been a while. Wow, it's been a while, but webinars were not informative. Mm-hmm. They were not engaging. They were not productive.
Right.
Because you're on the other end of a camera and I'm talking, and what are you doing? Napping, doing something else, not paying attention.
Old
and
laundry,
if you're, and if your camera's off, you're not even listening.
Right.
And there's currently that has picked up and evolved a little better where with technology now, it's a little easier and a little more, you're get more engaged. There's programs out there. There's companies out there. Polls and things like, but it's also a matter of, yes, you have a poll, but are you still learning?
Right, yeah.
And there's,
or are you just waiting to answer the question?
Yeah. And I mean, and I'm not going to give the name of the, but there's a company out there and they had their annual training and it is a complete waste of time.
Yeah.
It is 100% complete waste of time because it is the same thing over and over and over again. And it's just basically, they're like, hey, here comes a poll question. So then everybody jumps on their computers and goes, oh, answers it and runs off again.
Yeah.
And you can tell that's happening.
Yeah.
And you see the poll answers come up, you see the question come up, you see the answers and you're going, how in the world do they miss this? Because this is a basic 101 question and you see the number of people missing it. And what that tells me, they're not engaged. They're not giving the information out. They're not changing it up. Yeah. They're not keeping the person on the other end of that webinar engaged in that.
Right.
And so, but tremendously has changed because there are programs out there. There's things out there that now help get a better interactive going with the person on the other end of that webinar.
Yeah.
You know, and then we also have podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
We have TikTok and YouTube, and those are being utilized a lot to
more
get
short
out
form,
more short form stuff. Just get a message out, get a quick. This is how you open up Xactimate or Cotality, and this is how you do this over here, and just something quick. And if they're one thing I noticed that on in that end though, which I'm starting to see a little trend into the right direction on this, is you can go out there and type in like YouTube and Xactimate, and you're going to get 1,000 different videos.
Yeah.
And they're all going to kind of tell you something different.
Right.
But then there's some companies out there, and of course we do it as well. Here's where we have a channel.
Right.
So we're going to give you a uniform product in that channel.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be 50 people telling you something. Right. It's going to be one voice, one message, all in the same format. Wow. You know, and then it's, when we talk about tech has been heavily involved.
Oh, yeah.
Specifically recently, and I'm not going to go into a lot, I can't go into a lot of details about how we're using tech, but basically we're taking the three types of learning, the visual, the auditory, the, I can't even pronounce it. We're taking the three types of learning and we're focusing it into one thing because, you know, you got your audio, you and I talking, you go up to it in front of a class, you sit there and you're going to talk in front of the class and you're going to say, okay. And then you have your visual. You know, and and that's kind of how things have evolved over time. You had somebody talking, you had a presentation up there, and we see a lot of that still now. Somebody's sitting there talking a presentation, you're just like, please stop.
What time's lunch?
Please stop. Yeah. Please just get on with this. But then you have the engagement piece that is critical, and that's the three parts. And we're starting, you're starting really and use this more where it's like, okay, you're not just sitting in this webinar or sitting in this training or sitting in this class.
Yeah.
You're engaged in it.
Right.
Because unless you're hands-on, you're not going to remember. And you're going to fall back into that 25% where people are just going to lose you within 10 minutes.
Well, you know, just like we've got a couple classes, too, where we have it down in the computer lab where people are sitting at a computer and they're following along, whether it be in an estimating program or a claims management system. You know, even when we bring on new CAT employees, we like to do that. You know, sit them at a computer, have them actually do something in the class because then, I mean, they're directly involved.
Yep.
They're not just listening to, this is how you do this. And when you click here, see on this screen, you're going to find this over here. Let me do it with the mouse.
Yes.
Let me type that in, you know, and get more
and
out of
get
it.
Get a habit of doing it. Get a habit of going click, that click, 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 click. Because if you're watching it on the screen, somebody else do it, you completely missed step two.
Yeah.
And then you probably got a text message and you missed step six.
Yeah.
And then when you actually sit at a computer, you're going to go, you're going to get step two and go, I need help.
Yeah.
I'm going to help. I'm
already what that picture looked like.
So I just wasted 2 hours of training just to get you to raise your hand 2 hours later and tell me you missed something. You know, and also on the tech side, the tremendously in changing the way things are is you're starting to see a lot of carrier-specific training.
Yep.
And heavy.
Right.
You're starting to see some companies. And again, some companies do too much. You're starting to see more with CMS, with learning management systems like we have and things like that, where you can actually take it and dissect something down into segments.
Right.
So I'm not just taking all this information and throwing it at you at one time. Here, I'm giving you bits and pieces of it that end up being the whole part. And then so you can take your time to do one, two, three, four, five. And next thing you know, you finished them all. You go, okay. Exactly. Versus here's one massive course. Right. Figure this out.
Yeah. It's like having a book. You know, you can have 400 pages of a book, but the chapters are helpful too.
Yes.
It gives you a stopping
perfect,
point.
Perfect.
It gives
perfect
you a,
example.
You know, I listened to this one previously. Let me jump to this one. You know, something like that where you can break it down. And like I said, I know we do that at CNC too. You know, as opposed to having, and you and I have talked about this at length, instead of having a 4 hour class, let's have an hour class and then do it three times.
Yeah.
You know, look,
you got to break it.
Exactly. Somebody shows you a video, the first thing I look at is, how long is this thing?
Yeah.
If it's a minute and a half, you got me. If it's 30, I'm like, I may not.
But you know, I'll say something about it. If you're a new adjuster, though, you may not think that way when you're coming in. Seasoned adjuster could be like, it's another one of these. But new adjuster may not think that. But you're still like every other person out there. You're going to lose focus over a certain amount of time unless you break it down, unless you're showing it this way, which is how we are starting to really utilize some things out there and to dissect down, segment it out for you so it's bite-size learning.
Right.
But as a new adjuster, you've got to commit yourself to doing that.
You have to.
If you have 10 bite-size courses, take 10 bite-size courses.
Right.
I mean, I'm learning something new right now. I found this pretty cool website, and I started looking at stuff, and I'm like, I'm going to learn how to do this.
Yeah.
And they give you these modules, and they say, okay, this one's going to take you 5 minutes, this is going to take you six, and I'm able to stop in between. And then I'm able to go here and click a button, and it'll tell me, give me some questions related to that so I can still enhance what I'm learning over here, so try to enhance what I'm back and forth.
Yeah.
So it's just like a side coach in a sense.
Gotcha.
So and that's kind of how training has to be. That's how I think training is evolving too.
Yeah.
But then again, you're not committed to it. It doesn't help you at all.
Out of it. Yeah.
Doesn't help you at all. You can't just say, oh, I'm too busy to cut my grass and sit on my porch drinking beer. No. Get your headphones on.
Right.
Get your iPad, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Go cut grass and listen to it.
Yeah.
And then when you get a chance, sit back down and watch it again. And when you get another, do it again.
Right.
And just continuously repeat it over and over and over and grow those processes into habits. And as you get better, and I see this a lot with seasoned adjusters who come to our class as well. They may have been doing it for 10 or 15 years, but they've come to our classes even though it could be a basic 101 class, they still come in there, they still listen, they're still trying to pick up tips and tricks and other things like that, but they're also engaged in giving feedback.
Right.
Like, hey, this is something new I learned. You may want to incorporate that into your presentation.
Yep.
This is something that, you know, oh, I didn't know that changed. Okay, let's, and they start, they're using their experience to help create better training first. Because, I mean, as trainers, we're involving.
Mm-hmm.
We're learning new things.
Yep.
You don't know everything.
No.
But we have to figure out how to take it and implement it into something presentable for somebody else to comprehend it and learn it. But we're learning at the same time as well.
Yep.
And we're not just going, oh, I learned everything. I'm the executive vice president of training now. I don't have to do anything anymore.
Right. No. No.
I mean, you can't. You already see my computer right now with the multiple tabs that I have open because I'm like, oh, I can figure out how to train, use this program and do this and do this and do this.
Yeah. I always look down there. I'm like, what's he building in there?
But, you know, and then, you know, like I said, the carrier-specific training is being more and more involved. I mean, companies are starting to be more engaged because I think, like you point out earlier, is they want to commit to an adjuster and give them the time to help them be better because we don't want that adjuster to get a claim that doesn't have the experience, that is not qualified because it does that adjuster no good.
Yeah.
And then they go running off.
Yep.
So
they do. And then the whole process, like you said, just kind of falls apart.
Yeah.
Now, I do want to show the desk some love here because we talked a lot about field, too, you know, like even with technology, the cameras, the apps, things you can use in the field. But desk training, how does that differ from field training? Is desk training, you can't really do it like you can field, like go to a training house and get on the roof with it. Your desk adjuster's not going to do that, right? They could, but it's not really going to help them in their day-to-day. As a desk, what's like the best avenue for them?
Well, without
I don't think it's lecture style, but what do you
So, you know, kind of grew up in the field, so I'm just going to say, without the field, the desk would just be unsuccessful.
I would agree.
No, I'm just saying. I'm joking.
I would agree because the field is the eyes and ears of what happened.
Yeah, I mean, you got a point. But, you know, at the same time, when you think about the desk training and the field training, they're really very similar. They should be very similar. Now, there's going to be some differences where you're going to be dealing with this system over here that the field is not.
Right.
But overall, I mean, overall, they're pretty much similar in terms of what you are kind of learning. And when you think about the success of a field adjuster is only enhanced by the success of the desk adjuster.
Agreed, and vice versa.
And vice versa. Yeah. And the reality of it is when a good field adjuster should know what a desk adjuster does.
Yep.
A good desk adjuster should know what a field adjuster does. Now, it doesn't mean you have to be in the field and work in the field all the time as desk adjuster, that you're going to not be successful as the desk because you didn't have the field experience. Mm-hmm. But you still need to comprehend what the field does.
Yeah.
Because you're working together.
Yeah, you're both bridging that gap
between
beginning of the claim and end of the claim. Yeah.
And this person's doing something one way, field adjuster doing something one way. The desk adjuster has to understand why they're doing it that way so they can give the right information back to them on what they need.
Right.
And if if you don't understand why they're doing this way, those lines get crossed.
Right.
Nobody's successful at that point.
Yeah, because like on the property side, desk is the one that's calling coverage. You're dependent on the field to do their job properly.
Correct.
They were trained up on the equipment and the technology and, you know, the estimating price. You got to make sure that they're, you know, A-OK before as a desk. You can really start taking on, you know, like on the desk side, I think of phone etiquette is one of the big things for them.
Correct.
Field adjuster, you might make one phone call, schedule the inspection. You get out there, shake their hand. Here's what I'm going to do. Now, I know flood is different, but I'm speaking from experience.
Oh, the property. Yeah, and I agree. The communication piece is critical but let's say I'm a new adjuster coming in and I'm trying to decide what I want to do, desk or field, which one?
Yeah.
Well, desk, you know, you think, okay, you're going to have to learn systems. You're going to have to understand the systems and everything.
There's a lot of process.
A lot of process. You're going to have to kind of have an idea like exact analysis, the claims management system they're using, the client-specific stuff that they're using. Yeah. You're going to have to learn that, which, you know, here we evolve that training into our processes.
Right.
Okay. We're not saying, okay, you figure it out yourself. No, we're going to work. But then you also have to understand the documentation review and analysis.
Now, this is where the field comes in as an important piece, too. Because if they're not documenting properly, you have to be able to identify that.
Right. Yeah.
Because you can't, and I see this a lot, you can't just rely on the field
yeah.
and think, oh, what they're doing is perfect.
Yeah.
And it's.
You wish it was that way all the time.
Yes.
And sometimes it is. Sometimes they do a great job.
Sometimes.
But it's not always.
Sometimes it is. But you have to, but you're kind of relying on them to give you feedback and give you the information you need. But at the same time, you have to look at it and go, is this accurate?
Right.
And if it's not, what do I need and the questions I need to get back to that field adjuster for them to get the information to me accurately? And I kind of mentioned, you know, I know we're kind of talking about desk, but at the same time, the field has to understand, what do I need to do over here to make sure I get this message
right.
and this information yeah. to the to the back to the desk?
How do I tell my story? How do I convey my
correct.
Field inspection
correct.
In a written form yep. to them? You're not going to get to just call them and have a 3-hour conversation.
Yep. But
yeah, this is everything I saw. Yep. You got to be able to put it on paper or, you know, in a software.
Because you're the eyes and ears.
Exactly.
Yeah, the field.
This is what I saw. Yep. This is what I think. This is what I know.
Because then as a desk, you have to take what they saw and interpret it into what is covered.
Yeah. And then be able to convey that to the next person, which is the
correct.
Policy holder or the representative or whoever.
But then it goes back. The field is important to understand why things are this way mm-hmm. in order to give that message, hey, I saw this, this, and this. I'm not interpreting policy because yeah. that's your job to do this,
yeah.
but here's all the details of what I saw for you now to interpret policy. Yeah. So as a desk adjuster, you have to understand policy yeah. Coverage. Policy and termination, you have to be able to identify that. Look at the policy and know, okay, this is where I'm pulling this information from. Here's why it's covered. Here's how it's settled
yeah.
and all that. But you have to be able to do that pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So I think that's a critical piece. And then probably to tie it all together, like your point, is the communication.
Yeah.
If you're not clear and effective, it's bad.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, never gets better either.
Yeah. I was trying to think of a more just a detailed term.
Yeah.
But it's just bad.
Yeah, it just is. Yeah. Well, and I certainly think this way. I know you do too. I think it's beneficial for field adjusters to attend desk classes and desk adjusters
oh, yeah.
to attend field classes.
Yeah.
Sure, you may not need to know how to write that coverage letter as a field adjuster, but I need to know what they're looking for in order to write that coverage letter so I know what to give them in my narrative or in my photos.
100%. And you need to know why the desk adjuster is getting calls and what kind of calls yeah. they get and how yeah. they deal with and yeah. how they go through that.
Yeah.
But then, you know, that when I look at the communication, it really goes back to both field and desk. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to be a good communicator.
Yeah.
If you're good at communicating, you're going to relieve, it's going to be stress free.
Yeah.
You're going to take away that. You're going to be organized.
Yeah.
You're going to be effective. You're going to be able to control a claim much better.
Yeah.
If you can take what you know, the knowledge that you picked up in training, the policies, the perils, the identification, everything that you, and be able to communicate that mm-hmm. properly. Because let's go back to our fence situation and our total loss.
Yeah.
To those policyholders, that's devastation.
Yeah.
Fence, $2,000. Total loss, $200,000.
Sure.
They're still they still could be at the same level of frustration and stress that policyholder is going through because I gave you a policy when you got your homeowner's insurance.
Yeah.
Have you ever read it? No.
No.
And now you show up as the adjuster, and I'm expecting you to explain everything to me.
Look at you as the expert. You know?
Correct.
You're the one that's representing the company.
And how much did you learn
right.
in the off season to be able to interpret that and communicate that message to the policyholder?
Yeah. We even got T-shirts with Dominate the Off-Season on them. Yeah. And Dominate the
Season. I thought about
season.
Wearing one today instead of wearing the same shirt that I wore last podcast.
I wear mine periodically around the house, so. All right. So before we go today, this was all fantastic. And I don't want to get into all my thank yous yet because I do have one last question for you. For a new adjuster, if they could only focus on mastering, let's say like 3 things early in their career, and I know there's hundreds of topics, but if they could focus on 3 things that they just got to master in the beginning, it may not make them the greatest adjuster ever right this second, but it's at least going to give them a head start on folks that maybe don't take it seriously or skipped these 3. What would you say your 3 things are?
So probably my 3 things we've touched base on them already.
Yep.
Number 1,
has got to be customer service. Yep. It has to be communication. You have to treat adjusting not as a part-time job like a lot of people do. Yep. You know, and they go out, and I'm not sure how much time we have, but I could talk about this probably for an hour. But, you know, you hear in the industry out there and other podcasts, they're like, we're going to interview this adjuster who's making $300,000 a year. He's brand new. Look, teach you how he can do this. Yeah. It's not reality. It's one adjuster out of several hundred that has been successful.
Yep.
And the others go, well, why can't I be successful at this? What do I need to do? What do I need to do? And this probably goes back into these three things as well. Communication has to be one of those. Mm-hmm. You have to learn to communicate your coverages, communicate your information, and not treat each policyholder as an adversary.
Yeah.
As a number.
Yeah.
As a, dang, I got to go out and do this again.
Yeah.
As a job, you have to truly care about each policyholder in terms of their situation, their condition, what they're going through.
You got to have the right mindset to be an adjuster.
You do.
You really do.
You do. And when a policyholder gets mad and they get angry, it's not at you.
They're not mad at you.
No. Yeah. You have to have a thick skin and just let that anger and whatever they want to scream at, let them do it.
Right.
Let them talk. It has nothing to do with you. It's the fact that they probably have a policy, and we don't know what's happening in their situation. I mean, heck, they're... spouse could have run off with the contractor, all we know. And now they're taking the frustration on you because you're the first person to show up.
Yeah.
We don't know what's going on in their life. But we have to treat them with respect, kindness, communicate what we can under the terms of the client we're dealing with, you know, because we can't communicate, oh, this is why it's covered, not covered. There's a lot of clients we don't do that.
Right.
But to be able to really have that conversation with them and make them feel like they are important. At the end of the day, and what you've given them is valuable.
Yep.
We would get, and we still do, and this is where you know customer service, the adjuster did a fantastic job because that worked well. But we would get letters where customer would write in and say, I just want to thank adjuster so-and-so for doing a great job. Even though my claim was not paid, and this is why I'm not paid, they were very professional and explained things to me.
Yeah.
And you're looking at that going, okay, they did their job.
Yeah. If they took customer the time to write a letter on something they didn't get paid on, they clearly ate.
Because when we get them all the time, they say, oh,
you denied my claim.
That's great. But we get them all the time where it's like, okay, we paid you total loss. I don't think the adjuster for giving me $200,000. Right. Yeah.
Sure
you're going to be happy. But when you've denied a claim, didn't pay for something, but you explain clearly why you succeeded right there.
Yeah.
And I think that is one of the things that I look at is don't treat it as a customer service mundane task. Don't treat every policyholder with respect, kindness. Answer their calls. Give them the answers. And if you're not, follow back with them. But don't just say, I'm going to follow back when they ever fall back up.
Right.
You know, reach out to them again. And if you don't have the answer, but communicate. Keep those lines of communication, customer service open. It's critical. Probably the next piece, peril interpretation.
Yeah.
Not just policy interpretation, but understanding.
How does hail damage something?
Yes.
How does wind damage something? Fire.
The art of identifying hail has just completely gone to the pooper.
That's why there's so many classes on it, because I think everybody's trying to chase the rabbit here about what's the best way to explain this, or do I even know how to identify hail?
Yeah, because we see stuff all the time, and you're like, that wasn't even close to a piece of hailstone.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got, and the one thing about it, trick about hail, you got to feel it.
Yeah.
You really have to. You got to feel it. But interpreting hail, what is really hail? And what causes hail?
Yeah.
Now, that's another thing that people don't say. Okay, we have a hail impact and the shingle got bruised.
Yeah.
Great. Do you know how the shingles was?
Has it manufactured?
Manufactured. Yeah. Why did it fail?
Right, yeah.
How does hail build up. I mean, what causes that? And understanding and starting to understand a little more along the lines, you have a broader knowledge that when you look at something, you go, like you said, fire. Like, oh, that wasn't arson. That wasn't a grease fire. Right, that was arson.
Yeah. That was,
but of course, you can't sit there and say this. Yeah, that's arson. Sure, you're committing fraud. Yeah. But at the same time, you can see something and identify and go, we have a question here.
Yeah.
It's like on the flood side of things. I see a lot of times where adjusters will go, oh, we have this water line down here. And all it is rain splatter from the flower bed where the rain hit and it splattered the stuff on the wall. And you can tell. Yeah. And the way you can tell is by it being able to identify those things over and over and over again and spending the time to go, okay, if I'm going to be a new adjuster and I'm going to come into this program and I want to do something, well, I need to specialize. I need to really specialize in something. What am I going to specialize? Do I want to try to do everything that I can, or do I want to go, okay, let me focus first on wind and hail? And if you do that as a new adjuster, learn what those really are and how to identify them and look at different patterns and just do a bunch of different research on why hail does this and why wind does that. And, you know, the velocity and how the corners get ripped up why this does that and why one house, when the wind comes across, and why this house may not have a lot of damage, why does this one does? Yes. And really understand that information. Yeah. I think that's critical. And the last one, to be able to accurately estimate those perils. Because when you get into your programs and you're writing an estimate, and let's just say, okay, I'm going to be a specialist. I want to learn hail, and I want to be able to write a really good hail estimate. Mm-hmm. Well, what is included in that line item when you remove? What does it not include in that line item? Right. What do I need to add additional line items for? And to be able to understand, okay, what does this code mean?
Right.
And what does that code mean? What does this shingle mean? And what does this mean? And why do I, if I'm going to tear this off, do I need to
what
remove?
What else do I have to do with it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't just paint something. Yeah. I got to be able to prep it and see it. Yeah.
I think those are the three things. And I know those are kind of broad. So that's why I mentioned the specializing in just one thing now.
Yeah.
You know, like my title. / flood technical, because 20 years ago I was like, you know what, I want to learn flood.
Yeah,
I want to focus on flood, and I did.
Yeah,
and I started pulling the standard flood insurance policies and reading them and interpreting them and going back and look at them and then writing presentations and writing stuff down and just over and over and over and over again, and then now if you ask me a question,
probably got the answer. Yeah,
probably had the answer. Yeah. And I would be honest. I might have to also go look.
Yeah.
Because it may have
changed. At least you know where to find
because,
it.
But the thing is, and they have changed.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Somebody may go, oh, we're not going to interpret this differently now. We're going to interpret it this way now. And it may have changed. But if I didn't go through training still 30 something years later, I would never have known item had actually changed.
You never know.
And if somebody comes along, you come along and say, hey, did you know this has changed on the policy? Well, I'm not going to just take your word for it. I'm going to go in and investigate.
Yeah.
You may be an expert in it, but I'm still going to go in and do my own investigation and do my interpretation and look at it and go, okay, yeah, where are we at with this?
Yeah.
He's right. What else is missing that is part of this new interpretation that I need to look at as well?
Yeah.
And just figure out things are so.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
So I think those are good three things. The communication / customer service, peril identification and knowledge. And then the actual estimating of those specific perils.
Yeah.
Not just estimating broadly, but estimating specific loss types.
And the one thing I didn't put out there as one top three, and I'm surprised you didn't ask me yet, is policy interpretation.
Yeah.
I don't want to get to that level yet until you can identify it, until you can write it.
Yeah.
And then when you get to that point, then start looking at, so if you want to add a fourth or there, that's when the policy, correct. That's when you start looking at the policy interpretation and start figuring out from there.
Yeah.
So
that's a good point. Yeah. So we'll make that a top four then.
No, I still think it should be a top three.
Okay. Top three.
I think it should be a top three because that's where you want to focus.
Yeah.
Focus on those. Become a master at those three things. And once you've done that and you call me out and say, hey, Craig, can you go look at this hail claim for me? I'm going to write you a perfect estimate. And then I'm going to turn it over to you. And then you're going to be the desk adjuster that goes, okay, this is my job to now look at what they provided me and be able to say, yes, this is covered, this is not covered. Here's why we need to take, this is why it's not covered, and be able to communicate that back to a policyholder.
Yep.
And then, okay, I want to be a desk adjuster now. Now I need to learn what you know as part four.
Yeah.
So that's what I look at.
I like it. Well, again, I can't thank you enough. How much we appreciate you being here. Second time guest, very, very special guest.
Just twice.
Yeah, just twice. You'll be back. You'll be back.
And what season is this?
Season 3.
And just twice.
Yeah. You'll be back for sure. But again, we appreciate you being here. I know it's a big time commitment, but I think we get some of our best content when you're here. So.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate always coming on and being able to give information back.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said at the beginning, it was part of the training. did cut into my golf game today, but yeah.
I don't believe that.
All right. I haven't swung a club in 25 years ever since I started doing flood technical.
Yeah, we have to change that.
We need to.
We'll talk after. All right. Thanks, Craig. All right, everybody, we just wrapped up another fantastic episode of the New Adjuster Podcast, Season 3, Episode 7, with our very special guest, Craig Fowler, a two-time guest now. I'm sure there'll be a third and probably a fourth and fifth somewhere along the line. So, again, very thankful that you joined us as well for the many times that you've watched. And if you've missed any of our previous episodes or seasons, go back, give them a watch or a listen, wherever you get your podcasts. I know there's a lot of platforms out there that you can get those. Make sure you subscribe to the channel, CNC, Catastrophe and National Claims. Like this video. Leave a comment, hit the bell icon so that way you get notified of all future content. And as always, we appreciate you being here, and we will see you next time.